after the apostles and others began to preach the gospel to different races, and they preached the gospel at different places, people responded to it, they were saved, and they became a part of the same congregation. Now, this is the first time that Jew and Gentile have ever been together with any degree of unity from the viewpoint of worshiping God. It has been since Moses, the Jew, and the law of Moses. The Gentiles simply had no part nor lot in this particular activity. Now that the gospel's been preached and people have been saved out of the Gentiles, the Jews have responded to the gospel, now they are mixed and mingled in a single congregation. And this has created problems, and it's one of the problems that Paul addresses when he writes to the church at Rome. And this problem has arisen over the issue of sin, not what sin is, but who commits sin, who is a sinner. Now, the Gentiles knew they were sinners, and the Jews knew that the Gentiles were sinners, and they were perfectly willing to admit the sinfulness of the Jew, but of the Gentile rather. But when it came to the Jew, they considered themselves an upper class kind of church member. They did not accept being a sinner in the same way that they wanted the Gentiles to accept that they were sinners. And Paul has charged in his first part of the Roman letter that all have sinned, and that the Jews sinned in the law and the Gentiles sinned without the law, but whether you sinned in the law or out of the law, it still meant that you were a sinner. So we've looked at how Paul tried to explain to them that when they sinned, God dealt with them the same way that he would deal with a Gentile. The Jew had a particular covenant relationship, but that didn't mean God wouldn't deal with their sin. As Paul continues his letter to the Roman church, he wants to have the Jews accept this fact of their sinfulness without quibbling and without quarreling. You know, you can't have two levels of people in a congregation if that congregation's going to work together and serve God together. You can't have people who look upon themselves as better than the other part of the congregation. And that's exactly what was happening. The Jews were really saying, we're better than the Gentiles. And Paul realized that when this attitude is allowed to exist, there's going to be some serious conflicts, and that the church is never going to be able to reach the level of service that God has chosen for them. So Paul goes to the scriptures, and he uses the phrase in verse 10 of chapter 3, as it is written. Now, by choosing this phrase, Paul wants to set aside and still forever this attitude that the Jews possessed, that they had not sinned in the same manner that the Gentiles had sinned against God. As it is written. And then Paul is going to quote from a number of Old Testament books and circumstances to prove that it is written that people do sin against God. And then he's going to use this in a very peculiar way. As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. And the first place that Paul quotes from is Psalm 14, 1 through 3. And the word righteous means right or just. So, as it is written, picks up one of the Psalms, there is none righteous, no, not one. Now, Paul will change the writing a little as he changes from Hebrew and writes in Greek. Necessarily, there'll be some change, but the sense of it will always remain the same. Then, he's describing the character of the Jew. He's describing the character, perhaps, of the unbelieving Jew. Perhaps the character of the believing Jew. But certainly, he's describing the character of the Jew who has not exercised faith in the coming one. There is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth. There is none that seeketh after God. All of this from Psalm 14, 1 through 3. When Paul says that none of them understand, it doesn't mean they're not capable of perceiving the truth, but it has in it the idea that they're not capable, or at least they're not trying, to collect the facts that are presented in nature, that are presented from the heart, that are presented from the Word of God, and presented from what they've seen and understood, and assemble all these facts into a whole thing. They've got everything scattered out. And because they will not bring together to a single feature all of these things that they know, then they don't have understanding. That seeketh after God. That is, that searches out God. The idea is that God, and this is another statement, looked down from heaven upon the sons of men and to see if there were any that did seek after him and did understand. The idea of God looking down and shading his eyes and examining every heart in the universe and not seeing a single person that understood and not seeing a single person that would seek after him. They're all gone out of the way. They are together become unprofitable. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. Again, from Psalm 14, 1 through 3. They are all gone out of the way simply means they've all strayed from the path of righteousness, and they have all together, every one of them, become unprofitable. And I think those of you who grew up on the farm, and perhaps the mothers who've had to put milk in the refrigerator constantly for the family, will understand what this word unprofitable means. They have altogether become unprofitable. And it's based on the idea of milk that goes sour and is no longer usable. They have altogether become unprofitable. We might even say that all of the people have become worthless and all of the people have gone sour. Not one of them acts honorably. Now, Paul has stated the character of the unbelieving Jew. Now he's going to give the evidences. And he hadn't stated anything except in sort of generalities that do with the character of these people. Now he's going to get into specific evidences of their unrighteousness. Their throat is an open sepulcher. With their tongues they have used deceit. The poison of the asp is under their lips. He's quoting now from two verses in the book of Psalms, Psalm 5, 9, and Psalm 140 and 3. His idea is this: Their talk is foul and filthy like the stench from an open grave. Their throat is an open sepulcher. Again, a figure of speech that emphasizes the filthy language that they use as they talk. Their tongues, they have used deceit. This means to use bait, to entrap, to lead astray. So, what these people have done is that they have used their words to trap and ensnare people. What they say is like the poison from an asp, an extremely deadly serpent. And when it states that it's under their lips, the fangs of the asp was curled under where they did not show until when they bit, they expanded or extended and snagged in flesh and shot the venom into the victim and poisoned the person. And oftentimes they died very quickly. Same kind of poison that was used for suicides for one of these serpents of this nature was used for suicide by many people because it was so quick and so deadly. So the advice and the things these people say, the language they use is to the people they come in contact with what a poisonous snake is to that same person. Describes then their language and their talk and things that come from their mouth. In verse 14, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Psalm 10:7. Cursing is simply calling down God's wrath. It doesn't mean just to use bad or what we call dirty words, but it's an imprecatory. It calls down God to damn and wrath, and to bring His wrath down upon people. Bitterness means bitter taste. Their mouth is full of cursing, and they are constantly using the bitterness of their hearts and calling down the wrath of God upon people. Verse 15, their feet are swift to shed blood. Proverbs 1:16. And it means they're quick to kill. They do not wait. They do not think. They do not weigh things. Their first impulse is to kill. Swift to kill. Keen to kill. Eager to kill. Hoping to have the opportunity to kill. Verse 16. Destruction and misery are in their ways. Proverbs 1:16. Destruction means to render inactive, to make useless, void, or abolish. It literally means to affect something in such a way as to make it totally and completely useless. The word misery here means hard work, severe labor, and therefore bodily pain that comes from being forced to do hard, grinding labor and the distress that it brings upon the body. So how do they affect people that are in their sphere of influence? They cause people to be useless. In other words, if you came in contact with one of these people and you fell under their influence after a period of time, you as a human being would find yourself abandoned, your family abandoned, your work abandoned, and yourself useless and lying as though you had been forced to labor over long periods of time with your health wrecked and your body aching and bleeding from overexertion. And the way of peace have they not known? Again from Proverbs 1:16. They have never known what it's like to try and be good. They've never said, here is strife and anguish, and here's the way of peace. We choose the way of peace. They simply have no idea what it is to be kind and gracious and good. The path of peace they have never experienced. This is quite an indictment. There is no fear of God before their eyes. Psalm 36:1. This is where Paul quotes from. And reverence for God does not enter their thoughts. And without the fear of God to moderate their behavior, they become incorrigible and totally and completely corrupted. Now this sounds as though it's directed to the outlaws of the Gentile world. It's directed toward the generals, that is directed toward the leadership of those who have plundered the world and subjugated the Jews and made the Jews prisoners. In other words, it seems as though it is written to describe the enemies of the Jews and not the Jews themselves. And this is the way they've always interpreted it, to mean this is a description of our enemies. This is a description of the Gentiles. But Paul says, as it is written, keep that in mind. As it is written, that is, you understand this to be written from God to someone. Now, here's how Paul applies this. Now we know that what things soever the law saith, it saith to them who are under the law. Now here he begins then to make this application that I assume is going to anger many Jewish people in the congregation. Paul writes, it is a conceited, plain point that whatever things are found in the law, it is speaking to them for whom it is expressly intended, and that is the people that are under the law. So the conclusion is this: as it is written means that it is addressed to the Jew and it applies to the Jew. My, what a stinging rebuke that is. The law didn't apply to the Gentile. The law was not written to the Gentile. The law was not to be used by the Gentile in his service to God, because he did not have the ordinances. It would have been wrong if a Gentile had offered the sacrifices that the Jews offered. He couldn't have set a temple up somewhere in Greece, and offered the sacrifices of the Old Testament. They had to be done by Jews who were of the lineage of the Jews that fulfilled that office. It had to be done in a particular place, in Jerusalem. It had to be done at a particular time. All of this was without any hesitation or movement. It had to be done expressly, as God had revealed his truth to them. Now, Paul said, this is what's written, and it applies to you. Now, why? Why does Paul say that the Bible was written, and he has used these words rather? Here's the reason: that every mouth may be stopped, and all the world may become guilty before God. Look, the Gentile's mouth has already been stopped. The Gentile's mouth has already confessed his guilt before God. The Gentile has already acknowledged that he's a sinner. But the Jews hadn't reached that confession yet as a group. And Paul said, I want you to understand that the law was written to Israel, and it was written that their mouth might be stopped, and that all the world, that is, when the Jew admits his guilt, then all the world will be guilty or become guilty before God. The word stopped here means to build a fence around. The Jews had no control of their tongues, and they were never ready to admit and confess their guilt. And Paul said, I'll just build a fence around it. I'll shut you up. I'll stop your mouth, that every mouth may be stopped and every tongue be ceased, and And all the world, that is Jew and Gentile then, become guilty, are under sentence, and the sentence of condemnation before Almighty God. And then Paul gives them the purpose of the law, and this is something that I'm sure they had not considered. Here's the purpose. Verse 20. Therefore, by the deeds of the law, there shall no flesh be justified in his sight. Therefore, that is the conclusion of all these verses that we have studied. The conclusion of the statements that I've made is this. By the deeds. This is a word that's translated sometimes energy, and it means work or act or action. Therefore, no person by human endeavor, no human being can be made upright in the sight of God by observing the law. And then this little statement right here. For by the law is the knowledge of sin. All that the law can do is make men conscious of sin. Indeed, it is the straight edge of the law that shows us how crooked we are. Anyone who's done much building will realize that there are some important tools. They may not be expensive. They may not cost a lot of money. But in order to build a house that looks like anything, you need to use them. One of them, perhaps you can use a level both ways for horizontal and vertical, but you've got to use constantly a level. Now, I don't have but one good eye. Perhaps this may be the best one. It's made out of plastic. It probably lasts years after this other one's rotted in the grave. That's going to be unusual, you know, if I'm ever dug up. Just open the grave and there's this perfectly good plastic eye. But that may be my best eye, I don't know. But I know when Betty and I were working, just there trying to build a house, that I'd look at things and I'd say, that really looks good. And she, in a very kind way, would say, well, where's the level? You know, so we'd put it up there and it'd be about a half bubble off. Because you have no depth perception when you have one eye. And oftentimes things will look perfectly straight, and then you can glance off and look back, and then they'll look like they're just really bad crooked. Sometimes they're straight and they look crooked. So I learned working there that the best thing I could do, instead of just using my judgment, instead of just backing off and say, just a little more, that'll be fine, nail it. I found out that created bad, bad problems. Best thing to do is just use that level, use that plumb line. Just don't try to shortcut it. Don't try to work it out of your tool box. Just get it out when you start to work, and every time you want something level, use the level. Every time you want something straight, use the straight edge. Because that's how you tell how unlevel or how crooked things are. And that's exactly what Paul said the law was for the Jew. The law will tell you how crooked you are. It'll show you how much you're leaning one way or another. It will condemn you when you've done wrong. So the law and the purpose of the law is not to create sin, simply to demonstrate and to show us our sins. That's the purpose of the law. It's so simple, Paul said. For by the law is the knowledge of sin. It is the straight edge of God that tells us whether we're doing things right or whether we're doing things wrong. And it was to the Jew. Her idea was, since we have received the law, when we do the things taught in the law, that makes us righteous in the sight of God. When we offer these sacrifices, that's what makes us righteous in the sight of God. While we're Abraham's children, we've got the covenant that God made with Abraham, and so his covenant applies to us because we're his descendants of his genealogy, we're his people. Paul said that's a wrong conclusion. In fact, when Jesus was on earth, he said that God was able to raise up or change stones and raise up the stones children to Abraham. That was how physical descendants of Abraham was no real problem. It's people of faith that count. So these people, by looking at the law, were not to assume the law made them right, but to see how badly they had strayed from the things that were right. And then under this condemnation, under this guilt, they were to cry out to God for mercy in the name of Christ and bestowed upon them as righteousness by faith, extended because of what Christ did on the cross of Calvary. We'll learn how that the law, the righteousness of God comes to us by faith of Jesus Christ, that it's extended to them that believe, for there is no difference. For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Stand with me as we sing our hymn of invitation this evening. And if you're saying, but what is a standard that I can use today to know whether I'm a sinner or not? If Christ fulfilled the law, I'm a Gentile, I've never been under the law, the Ten Commandments don't apply to me, how do I know whether I'm a sinner or not? Look at Christ. Measure your life alongside the life of Jesus Christ. And if you feel that your life is any way different from His, that'll teach you that you're a sinner. If your life is as good as Jesus Christ, then of course you're not a sinner. But I don't believe your life is that good. I don't think you've lived as righteously as He lived. He was made under the law, kept the law, yet He lived without sin. Trust Him.